Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here, covering everything Wisconsin athletics. And on today's show, we're going to first talk about news of the day. Short little segment there with the Badgers getting back into the rankings. We'll talk about some other Big Ten teams and where they are in the latest AP poll now that the Big Ten teams are allowed back into the rankings. Should be a fun little conversation. Then we'll get into some around college football talk on our Monday episode. A couple weeks ago, we did a recap of kind of the weekend, the games, and there was plenty of crazy action this past weekend, some big teams going down, which should affect the playoffs and everything like that. With the Big Ten now being back in the mix, it'll affect the Badgers and surrounding teams even more. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll get into some returner profiles for the Wisconsin football team. Started that back up as well last week with the return to football. So plenty of stuff to get to on the show, which should be fun and a nice conversation. Then for our episode later in the week, we've got a couple things in the works, possibly a mailbag. We'll start looking at the Wisconsin depth chart for the offense and the defensive side of the ball. So some fun things coming. Nice and easy light show for you guys today, and then we'll get into some of that harder-hitting stuff next week or later this week and into next week. So, Matt, how you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Ready to talk a little Badger football after watching another great weekend of college football and NFL football. You know, the Sunday night game last night was a lot of fun. So how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it was great to see the Packers get a win. I know both you and I are Packer fans, and I would guess a good amount of our listeners are as well. So that was a welcome sight on Sunday night football. Got a good one. You know, we're recording here on Monday, so a good game Monday night here with the Chiefs and Ravens, so that should be a nice round out to a fun weekend. And things felt a little bit more normal this past weekend with the return of the SEC and with the Big Ten getting closer. Eventually, that first October weekend with you know, all the conference, I guess not the Pac-12 and Mountain West and MAC, but three of the big boys kind of back in action. You know, with the Big Ten joining up with them, will be a nice sight, and we'll finally feel more normal. You know, the SEC coming back really helped this past weekend, but can't wait for those Big Ten games to get started. But with that, with the return of the Big Ten, that also comes the rankings. So we'll get into our news of the day right now.
Here's what's happening.
All right, so news of the day. The teams that have not played, which would be the Big Ten and Pac-12 conferences, are now allowed back into the AP rankings. A little bit, kind of a weird, process there with the AP poll rankings. Some teams not playing, things like that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the Badgers come back in ranked 18th, which 18th in the coaches poll, 19th in the AP poll, which is a little bit lower than what they were before everything kind of happened. The original AP poll, I believe they were 12th or in that range. So definitely a drop down because of, you know, not being in action and some teams playing. But it's nice to see Wisconsin back in there, some other Big Ten teams in there as well, which we'll get to in a minute. But what did you make of the Badgers ranking getting back into the polls, which is nice to see?
Man, I swear you could just blindfold somebody and ask them where the Badgers are going to be ranked preseason. You could probably say, oh, yeah, they'll be in the teens, you would most likely be right, outside of a few years where they get are in this top 10 or in the upper 20s. But yeah, I mean, anywhere between that, you know, 13 to 19 ranking stage makes a lot of sense for the Badgers right now. I think it'll be really interesting to see what this team looks like once they're actually put the pads on and are playing in a game, because you're looking at some teams that are in front of them, and while, yes, they've played some games, there's others that haven't, like Oregon's up to 14 as well, and they haven't played a game, and they'll actually be playing another week later than the Big Ten. Oklahoma is right in front of them in the AP poll, and Oklahoma looked very, very beatable considering the way they lost to Kansas State. And so I'm excited to see how things shake out. A lot of risers like Miami, another team that really jumped up in the rankings, but the Badgers are just going to kind of hold serve and hang in there, I would assume, in the top 25 until they play. And then it's all about what you do on your resume to really make a difference, because right now it's just fluff for the most part. Nothing really matters with the rankings at this point.
Yeah, right now it's just got to, once you're in there, it's nice to see, but once you're on the field, you really got to take care of business, and you might see more teams kind of pushing the envelope. They quote unquote running up the score and looking impressive. You're going to have some conferences and some teams that are going to have to really put their best foot forward every week out. Can't even, even if you in college football, the age old adage is, okay, you escaped a win, but that might not even be enough for you. This season, you might need to win and win impressively to, make your case for the college football playoff, because there's going to be teams that don't get through their entire schedule. There's teams that were supposed to be playing those first 4 weeks and still hadn't played. So it's going to be wonky. It's going to be weird. But when you get your chance, you're going to have to prove that ranking, and the Badgers will get that here in just a few weeks, which will be nice to see. And I like what you mentioned with the 13 to 18 ranking. If you just kind of threw a blind dart, you'd pretty much hit there every time. And personally, I think most Badger fans like that. I mean, if we're ranked too high, it always is nerve-wracking. But if you're ranked, kind of in that normal range, it usually, you can almost peg up a 10-win season when the Badgers are a little bit underrated, maybe in those upper teens, seasons like that, which always end up improving on their number. So it's nice to see the Badgers in that spot. I think that's a fair and good spot to be where they're at right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good launching off point. It's now it's just about making sure that you're winning your games that you're supposed to and going and doing it, because inevitably things in front of you will flesh out, and as long as you take care of business, you're going to be in the conversation for where you want to be at the end.
Speaking of teams in the conversation, we'll talk about the other Big Ten teams here quick. Ohio State came in at 6, Penn State at 10, Michigan at 23, so more Big Ten teams in there. Of course, for the Badgers, it'll be nice because Michigan being in the rankings will certainly help as they try to boost their resume with them on the schedule, having a road trip to Ann Arbor. But just how weird is it to you to kind of look at, because I was looking through the rankings and seeing some of these teams that were 1-0 or 2-0 and behind teams that haven't played. How weird and wonky is it to see these Big Ten and these Pac-12 teams? The Pac-12 is even weirder for me, Oregon being up there so high and they're not playing till November. How odd is it to kind of see some of that?
Yeah, it's definitely weird. You look at a team like Oklahoma State, even though they haven't done it pretty, they still are just barely in front of the Badgers, and that's kind of just a weird thing to figure. I thought the most interesting piece of some of the Big Ten teams is Ohio State, according to the AP voters, got the second most first place votes, right behind Clemson. Clemson got 55, so they're running away with it. Alabama got 3, and then Ohio State got 4. So I think that tells you exactly how bullish people are on Ohio State once they come back and are in the mix. I think Florida is another team that's up there, but it, really you look at Penn State, I think that makes a lot of sense. I could picture them being a little farther back. I do agree that they should be in front of Oregon, but I don't know if they should necessarily be in front of UCF, who's playing really, really good right now, albeit against, very different competition level. But I think really the more this plays out, the more the season rattles on, it'll come into a clearer picture. I think Michigan's mostly on name alone there at 23, just because I don't necessarily think that Michigan is got the hype that they normally do coming into a season. And you saw that you have other teams like Pitt, who's actually behind them, and they've won 3 games, a couple of them in conference. So it's one of those things where it's like, sure, but part of it is also that there's just not that many great teams to put in the rankings right now because there isn't as many playing.
Yeah, it's definitely odd. You always think about, it took me, I saw, like Mississippi State jumping into the top 25, and of course it was a great win for them over, at the time, 6th-ranked LSU. I think if you looked at LSU on paper, you wouldn't say they were a top 10 team with all that they lost, but that ranking still counts, and now all of a sudden you're up to 16, and it kind of took me back to, the NCAA football days, you know, on the PlayStation, where you would start with some no-name school and you'd schedule an early season game against a big you know, team like that and take them down, and all of a sudden you're just hoping you're hopping up into the rankings with one win, because that's kind of a lot of what the rankings look like right now. You know, there's teams jumping up all over the place. You know, BYU hopping in there at 22, and you know, teams like Tennessee, one game right back up in there. So it's a little wonky. It's a little weird that, you know, like the Volunteers got a win over South Carolina and still aren't ahead of the Badgers. It just reminded me of those olden days with the you know, the PlayStation 2 or the PlayStation 3. But it's going to be weird. It's going to be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out, because, like I said before, you're not going to have the same amount of games. So resume-wise, you can't have the same talking points. It's going to be a lot more eye test, which will be interesting to see. But I think if you're in a Big Ten team's case with eight teams, if you kind of handle your business, you'll be fine. The Pac-12, you're probably a little more nervous. You can't really afford any sort of shakiness, but it'll be cool to see how this all plays out. And at the end of the day, it's good to just be having more football, and everyone finally kind of getting a return to play is nice to see.
Yeah, I think it really just comes down to, you just got to win. You regardless of how many games you get in, if you win, you look good doing it. People are going to take notice. Just look at, like we said, Miami. They're 3-0. I think that's a little inflated based off the fact that Florida State is actually a big pile of trash. But I do think that the more you play and the more you just keep winning, it's going to help your resume, because there's only going to be so many undefeated teams this year because it is so weird. It's a goofy year that there's going to be teams having kind of those clunker games more often, I feel. And so if you're winning your games, you're taking care of business, you're fine. Just win and move along, like kind of like Texas did this past weekend.
Yeah, that's a good segue. We'll get into our round college football talk for the episode. We'll start with the big names going down. We talked about it a little bit already. With LSU getting knocked off by Mississippi State, and Oklahoma for the second straight year getting knocked off by Kansas State. Both games were very entertaining games, kind of back and forth. Was there one that maybe surprised you a little bit more, or that was, you know, as a win, more impressive for the underdog?
I thought, really, I didn't have nearly the expectations for LSU as a lot of people did. They lost their entire roster, like everybody of value. And then you also bring in that their top player isn't playing. Their second best player opted out of the season. So it's like they didn't have nearly the muster that they did last year. They don't have the wide receivers. They don't have the quarterback. They don't have all those first and second and third round draft picks that are littered around there. They had a completely different offensive coordinator. So I didn't expect them to come out and light the world on fire and be the sixth-ranked team. Now, did I think necessarily that they're going to lose to Mississippi State? No. But I was surprised just how bad Oklahoma looked offensively with their ability to protect the quarterback. I thought you looked at it. Spencer Rattler was running around the whole time. Now, part of that was he definitely got happy feet and was really excited to get out of the pocket every chance he could. But it was also the fact that he was a little gun-shy because the offensive line of Oklahoma was just dominated by Kansas State and Chris Klieman. So I thought that was the one that really jumped out to me, just because you know, Kansas State really wants to bring a hard physical brand to the Pac-12. And I thought that they did a really good job of that. And Oklahoma, who's had such a good offensive line for so long here these past few years, just really looked out of sync. Spencer Rattler, I think he's going to be good, but he definitely had happy feet. And he was, if you're going back to NCAA, he was the guy who would say hike, and then all of a sudden he's thrown off his back foot, rolling right every time instead of sitting in the pocket, reading the defense and making the throw. So I think that was the one that jumped out to me, because Lincoln Riley had that team clicking for multiple years here, and they did not look the part in basically their first big game of action.
Yeah, it was not pretty for either one, and the Oklahoma one definitely surprised me more. Like you hit the nail on the head with the LSU. That was actually in my betting preview. I took Mississippi State. I thought that was a really good bet for the weekend, and it kind of played out exactly how I expected it to, because like you said, they lost you didn't lose Steve Emmingser with the offensive coordinator, but they lost Joe Brady, who was basically the guy behind the offense pulling the strings. Lose Dave Aranda, your defensive coordinator, and then you lose pretty much every guy that gave you a pulse last year. It's tough to expect that to come back and compete. You know, I didn't necessarily think Mike Leach was gonna go into Death Valley and upset them, but I definitely thought that they would keep it close with just a, it's not the same LSU team, but for Oklahoma to be up so big and then to kind of blow that lead to Kansas State once again is kind of just telling of where they're at. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, they haven't looked good for years, and the offense can get them so far. You know, we've seen it in the playoff time and time again where the offense will get them there and the defense just can't win them the big one. But now all of a sudden you've got struggles on offense for Oklahoma, which you know, it's not like it's something that's developed over the season. That was, like you said, their first real test. You know, opening with Missouri State, that's not really a game you can get much read on. So it was definitely surprising to see the Wildcats take them down again. And then Spencer Rattler struggle a little bit. Part of me, you never root against too many kids, but if you watched, I don't know if you watched that QB1 Netflix show, Spencer Rattler did not look impressive in that show. So I've always kind of rooted against Oklahoma for that reason. You know, he's kind of we'll call it rude in that Netflix series. So it was kind of nice to see him be humbled a little bit, and I still think he'll be a great quarterback at the college level. But both games were, had all sorts of action and all sorts of intrigue, which was nice to see. You know, you love those college football upsets, especially early in the season. You don't normally get them, but both games were impressive. And for Kansas State and Mississippi State, now all of a sudden you've got that quality win. You know, you talked about winning and advancing. Those are two big wins. Of course, Kansas State lost that early season game to Arkansas State, but if you would have had that win and the Oklahoma win, now all of a sudden you've got a resume to build on. So it just shows you that every single week matters.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, you use the transitive property, and essentially Oklahoma lost to Arkansas State, but we know that that's not necessarily the case. But I also, it was nice to see KJ Costello go out and light the world on fire, throwing the ball around after he's been kind of dealt through with injuries since his time at Stanford. So it was cool to see that, and I'm excited to see that Egg Bowl later in the year when we get to see some craziness with Leach throwing the ball all over the place and Lane Kiffin doing God knows what.
Oh, there's going to be points galore in that one. That'll be fun Thursday or Friday. Thanksgiving week is normally when that one is. So that'll be whenever that one kicks off, it'll be a fun contest to watch those two. I remember when we did our road trip, that was one of the games I had circled, our dream road trip to see the Egg Bowl and see both of those two in action will be must-see television. All right, our next round, college football, Texas and Texas A&M, two teams also very highly ranked in the AP poll. Both survived scares. Texas going to overtime against Texas Tech and really needed a miracle comeback, you know, a nice onside kick recovery to tie that game and a two-point conversion to knot it up completely and then win it in overtime. Texas A&M, the score was close. The game was just kind of ugly. They're a team that is people were expecting a lot out of them. They get Alabama this week, and to only win 12-7 against Vanderbilt was a little ugly, considering the Commodores and where they were at. But what do you make of that, and just how important is it that again maybe you weren't pretty in the win, and things were struggling, but at the end of the day, you got the win, which keeps you a notch ahead of some other teams.
Yeah, I think that's what it's about, is you got to win those games when things just aren't going your way. Texas, that showed a lot of grit to be able to win that. I really was rooting for Texas Tech. I thought they had it in the bag, and then, I think they were up like 15 with 3 minutes left, and then things fell apart on them. But, yeah, I think really between those two, Texas A&M looked like another steaming pile of trash. They came in with a lot of hype, like you mentioned, and really just failed to live up to that. I just don't think Kellen Mond is that great of a quarterback. I don't think they necessarily have the pieces to make a deep run in the SEC this year. But I could be wrong, and that's why you play the games, because that first one can look bad if the rest of them look good. So it doesn't really matter from here. You just got to keep winning if you're both of those teams, and they're going to have their opportunities. I know Texas is going to be licking their chops now that Oklahoma's down.
Yeah, you're in a good spot if you've already, you know, Oklahoma's already got a conference loss this early in the season, and Texas just hanging on to win that. If they would have lost it, it would have been crazy to see, you know, where the Big 12 ended up shaking out, because Oklahoma State has been a team that has won ugly, but they've won their games, and that kind of keeps them a notch above Oklahoma right then and there. And then you've got Kansas State, who has won a great game, but lost one that you shouldn't have lost early in the season. So the Big 12 conference will be one that is certainly something to keep an eye on, because there's always a lot of points, there's not a lot of defense, and when you've got these short schedules, one loss can really make a big difference. But it's going to be interesting to see how those teams respond. You know, like you said, with Texas A&M, got a tough test this week with Alabama. Kellen Mond is not someone that I'm sold on either. I've always thought he's kind of benefited from the school and the name and the coach. But now these, you know, every team's got a chance to prove it on the field. It's going to be interesting to see how do they do that and how they advance through these short and condensed schedules. All right, speaking of kind of not playing their best football, Georgia started a little slow against the Arkansas Razorbacks. Very suspect quarterback play. And then, of course, Jamie Newman was their projected starter. He backed out of the season, opted out for that. And then they got JT Daniels in via transfer, but he was not medically cleared for that first week. He now is medically cleared, so that should give Georgia a big boost as they get ready to take on Auburn this week. What did you make of their contest, and how convenient is it that you get a star quarterback, a transfer guy that you were hoping to get eligible in before that Auburn game?
Yeah, I think that's pretty funny that that's just the way it's going to be. I also find it very convenient that JT Daniels was eligible in the first place as a transfer, being immediately eligible. But anyways, I think if he's not the guy, Georgia's not going to be anywhere near the playoff. They shouldn't be, at least, because Dwan Mathis and Stetson Bennett did not show nearly enough to make them look like anything seemingly close to a college football playoff team, compared to what we've seen from Georgia in the past. I know that they've got plenty of talent on that defense, and it's really good, but to have Arkansas hang with you is never great. I thought that really, you also look at it, I thought Auburn, that game was really close for good chunks of it between Auburn and Kentucky. That was just a wild ride of just weirdness for much of it until they kind of figured it out as well. So I think that's going to be a really fun game next week. But really, I think if you look at everything that's going on, we're talking about Georgia, we're talking about Texas A&M, we're talking about Oklahoma, we're talking about LSU. Those are all teams that are dealing with quarterback issues, basically, somewhat. I think A&M is pretty established in who they've got, but you look at those teams, and each of them has a new quarterback this year, and because you didn't have a full assortment of an offseason, and you didn't have spring ball, you didn't have all those different pieces, it's hard to kind of click right away. I think that it really helps a team like Wisconsin, where something earth-shattering happens. I think you got Jack Cohn as your guy, who's returning as a senior, who's been there, played a lot of football for you. So I think that's the type of thing that you look at it, and it really shows just how important it is to have that established quarterback, established team in a lot of ways. The Badgers have a lot to still figure out at the running back position, wide receiver, and other places on offense for how to be dynamic, but having that quarterback to lead the charge definitely is a major help, because the teams that have come out slow here really have struggled at quarterback. Another one was Florida State, for example. And then you look at a team like Miami, they're doing really well because they finally have a quarterback.
Yeah, continuity within a system and within, head coaches and coordinators is going to be even more important. You know, every year you look at when a new coach or a new staff takes over, there's always things you have to think of when you get a new quarterback, younger, players in the offensive line. That's all important, and that even gets heightened without, you know, no spring ball, kind of a weird fall practice schedule for a lot of these teams. So anytime you've got, you know, like the Badger situation, you've got your returning left tackle, you've got your returning quarterback, you've got, you know, your head coach and both coordinators, that's a good building block to, you know, field the team and hopefully have success as you get on the field, because these teams that are going through changes on the staff or are going through changes at some of those key positions have definitely struggled. So it'll be nice for the Badgers, and hopefully they can take advantage of it in their short little 8-game season here in just a few weeks. And we'll see just maybe if they're, you know, how far, if they are ahead of the curve of some of these teams that are dealing with some of that turnover.
Yeah, and hopefully they are ahead of the curve, and it's not something where, because they're missing, you know, their top two wide receivers and they're missing their top running back, that it doesn't hurt them. So it's one of those things where it can go both ways, but hopefully it goes in the right direction for the Badgers.
Most definitely. All right, guys, we'll go ahead and get into our returner profiles in just a second here, but we're going to knock out our couple ad reads, and then we'll get into we've got five players lined up. So stick with us through those, and we'll get into some Wisconsin football talk. All right, returner profiles. It's we started that back up with the announcement for the Badgers to return to the field. We've got five players that we are going to talk about today. First one is a outside linebacker. Haven't seen a ton of him. He's appeared in games. Not really been a guy that has, of course, lit up the stat sheet. But CJ Gates, outside linebacker. What do you make of him coming back at a position that now, with the moving of Jalen Franklin over to tight end, it gets a little bit thinner. But maybe he's a guy that you'll see a little bit of, you know, on the field this year.
Yeah, I mean, he played in all 14 games last year, primarily on special teams, but we've seen him in practice. He's got a really good motor. He's a guy who can get around the edge. He's athletic, but he's just kind of bounced around trying to figure out a position for him. He came in as kind of an inside linebacker, but he quickly outgrew that position and slid down to defensive end, and then now he's at outside linebacker, which I think makes a lot more sense for him. At 6'3", 240, he's got good size, but he's entering his redshirt sophomore year, so it's kind of time to kind of push for a spot, because whether it's this year or next year, his time is ticking here, and he wants to get in that two deep. I'm not so sure if he's going to be able to do it, just because the Badgers have such a strong youth movement at that position, but I agree with you that with the move of Jalen Franklin, maybe it's something to where he can get in there. He was really in on multiple special teams units, and I think he's a guy that could help them out if he puts it together.
Yeah, he's a guy that if you look at, is definitely intriguing. You know, he's got the size, he's clearly got the athleticism, very good on special teams. You know, not just a guy that's out there. He seems like a solid player that, you know, if you get him finally comfortable in a position, you know, bouncing around from inside to the line to now kind of a combo spot at that outside linebacker pass rusher position. Finally, he can maybe get settled in, and maybe you could see that jump from him this year. And if not, outside linebacker is going to be a position that hopefully with the year under his belt this year and coming into next year, that I think he could really have an impact and hopefully, you know, start to crack some things on the defensive side of the field, because he's got athleticism, he's got good size. But it'd be nice to just finally get a chance to see it, whether it be in the two deep this year or next year, or just kind of get a guy getting in, you know, late in the game if you're up by a lot, because he's got potential, but bouncing around is certainly have to make it hard on him as a player. You're trying to get settled in, and you're moving around positions that can't be easy. So now that he's settled, it'll be an interesting guy to keep an eye on, you know, this year and into next year.
Yeah, hopefully it works out for him, because he does have really strong traits. He was a good recruit coming out of high school. It's just been kind of a logjam at outside linebacker. Defensive end, he definitely appeared to be too small for that position in the Badgers 3-4. Inside linebacker, I don't know if he necessarily has the size for that, because he's really big for that position at 6'4". So I think he's just kind of a tweener that's got to figure it out and help them out where he can, and maybe this is the year he puts it together and helps them out in a way. I think he'd be a really good guy to back up Burks if possible, or or Isaiah Green may, just based off of that Jalen Franklin move.
Yeah, and then, you know, maybe he's a guy as we get into the season where he's surprised and comes out of nowhere and makes a big jump, kind of like we've had with Noah Burks last year, a guy that you saw flashes of him, you know the athletic ability that he has, and now we'll see if he gets a chance to do it on the field. All right, our next player is tight end Hayden Rucci. Of course, we talked to his parents and his brother, Nolan, a couple episodes back a few weeks ago. So go ahead, if you guys haven't listened to that one, go ahead and check that out. Nolan made his commitment to Wisconsin, and we had a nice conversation. And then we talked a little bit about Hayden coming back for this year. Both his parents said they feel like he's in a good spot coming back, you know, kind of off of injury and working his way into that tight end room. But a highly talented player. When I look at Hayden Rucci, when I wrote up his returner, I think the thing that really stands out for him is his physicalness. He's great catching the ball and being a guy that could be in the passing game. But I think his strong suit is really a guy that is just ability to kind of do it all and really throw some blocks. He's physical. His brother's the same way. Both are very strong. So an interesting candidate at the tight end position. When you look at who's in the room, of course, you've got Jake Ferguson, but there's a lot of depth and guys looking to kind of get on the field this year. So what do you make of Hayden Rucci as he comes back this season?
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be one of the guys vying for, inline tight end role. I think Jake Ferguson's going to see the field a lot. I do think that there's a potential for a guy like Jalen Franklin to see some time as an H-back, which is primarily a pass catcher. But the inline tight end spot is wide open, and I think Hayden Rucci is a guy at 6'4", 250 plus that he could make some waves there if he's healthy. And he is, from all accounts, he's ready to make a dent. And I think really you look at his size, I think him and Clay Cundiff could really make waves there if they can put it together and do that. I think they're going to have to battle Gabe Lloyd, who's an upperclassman walk-on, who's also really a really good athlete, similar size. But I do think that you look at Rucci and it makes a ton of sense for this to be a year where he can play. Cormac Sampson's no longer at tight end. He's now on the offensive line interior. And I think that really opens up the gates for some of these younger tight ends who are redshirt freshmen to vie for one of those roles and to play a little bit. And I think that's what you need. The Badgers deploy a lot of tight ends and really – It was a lot to ask for either of the freshman tight ends last year to come in and play automatically. Tight end's such a hard position to come in and play immediately. It almost always takes a redshirt year to do it. I think Jake Ferguson should have a big year, but I think just strengthening that room and continuing to bolster it, a guy like Rucci has a chance to pop and make an impact because we're not totally sure how long Ferguson's going to be around in a Wisconsin uniform, and the Badgers need multiple guys there at the tight end position so that they can actually get into some more personnel packages than they were kind of limited by last year due to the lack of tight ends that were available.
Yeah, and the growth of this room will be especially important as you look towards a certain role this year, but also next year. When you talk about Gabe Lloyd and Jake Ferguson and not knowing how long you're going to have a staple like that in Ferguson. So seeing some growth out of that group is going to be important. And for Joel Rudolph and Paul Chris this year, they can play the guys that have earned it and can get on the field because of their play and not just kind of out of necessity. You know, with the injuries they had last year, they were just looking for bodies at that tight end position. This year you've got that room, shored up a little bit where you won't have to, be throwing guys out there that aren't ready. So I think you'll see some nice development from the Rucci's and the Cundiffs of the world. And then the next year, who knows what kind of role they'll take on. It'll be nice and an important storyline to watch for this team when you think of the grand scheme of where they're at with that tight end position group. All right, our next player, Boyd Dietzen, a guy, again, that has played a little bit, appeared in 14 games for the Badgers, highly recruited kid out of high school. What do you make of him as he comes back on that defensive line?
Yeah, another guy out of Kimberly, which is one of the top schools in the state at kind of pumping out championships and wins from that area. I think he's a guy who he's getting better in size. You look at it, 6'3", 270 now. That was the biggest question mark for him, was kind of adding the weight, because he came in at kind of around that 240, 250 range, and now being up to 272 as a redshirt sophomore, he's getting to a space where he can fit into that defensive end role better and help them out. I think there's a lot of depth there in front of him still to kind of overcome. I think Isaiah Mullins and him are both guys who are kind of stuck behind, Henningsen, and then you've also got your two regular starters in Isaiah Loudermilk and Garrett Rand. So I think he's a guy who, if he could start and do some things on the as a backup this year and kind of show, hey, I'm ready when the seniors are leaving to make that leap, I think that would go a long way in helping him out, because he's got talent. He's really quick off the ball. It's just going to be a matter of him continuing to add weight and to show the coaches that he is going to be the guy to go opposite side of Henningsen instead of a guy like Mullins, or, you know, maybe if they get creative trying to move a guy like Bryson Williams out to D end in 2021. So I think it's really a play for him now as special teams and as a reserve to push forward for a role in 2021.
Yeah, you look at the guys in front of him right now, you don't see him probably cracking the field too much. Not hopefully for his case, but, you know, if you look at the starters with Rand and Loudermilk, you hope that those guys are healthy and on the field and you don't have to, go to Dietzen before he's not ready. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of develops. Kind of the same situation as Rucci in that tight end room, where there's a couple guys in front of him. And, of course, Rucci you'll probably see a little bit more because they play, a deeper tight end room. But it's going to be important to kind of see growth out of him with, Loudermilk and Rand. Being guys that this could be, they're in their final season, so it makes sense for them to have hopefully a big year and then someone step into their shoes at those end position, after the season. So if he can kind of grow within that position, learn behind those two and be a guy that could be paired in there with Mullins and Henningsen and like Bryson Williams maybe bouncing out there, I think the development there is going to be important, because you've got the two guys that are clearly your starters and dominating ends when they're playing. And then if you could develop two guys behind them and be ready for next year, it'd be a nice sight to see at that defensive end position.
Yeah, for sure. What about AJ Abbott? What do you think about him? I know he's the next guy on our returning profiles that we're going to talk about.
He's a guy, you look at the wide receiver room, it's kind of similar with Taj Mustafa that we talked about last week. Looking to make a name for himself and hop in there. But I think the nice part for Abbott is, of course, you've got Danny Davis in front of him. You've got Kendrick Pryor in the slot. And then you've got the two seniors behind those two in Crumholz and Dunn. Abbott and Mustafa are in that next man up. But for both of those guys, and in Abbott's case, when you're looking for a guy to maybe line up opposite Danny Davis, at 6'2", you're at a good start because you've got the height, but you've also got Elvis Whitted, who's coming in as a new position coach that doesn't have anything other than what he's seen of each of those guys. He's not a guy that has been working with Dunn or Crumholz for 5 years, and he wants to get them on the field. I think Elvis Whitted is going to put the best receivers on the field no matter what age and where you're at in the position. So if you're going to make a crack at this too deep at the receiver position, here's your shot. And he's certainly a guy that can do it. He's got athleticism. And we talked about the height. Maybe hasn't been a super highly recruited kid, but it's a guy that has developed okay, and now it's just time to see it. He's been a little bit on special teams, but hasn't played a ton at the receiver position. So to see where he's at and if he can get a crack at the field would be a fun sight, and now is his chance to prove it.
Yeah, I think he's the most likely guy out of any of the wide receivers. I think Chimray Dike could be a wild card, but I do think that AJ Abbott is the most likely non-senior to see the field at the wide receiver position. You mentioned he's got the height at 6'2", so he's got something that no one else on this roster has. Really, I mean, you've got Cooper Nelson, but he's a walk-on who's still years away. Whereas AJ Abbott, he added some good weight. He's up to 200 pounds. And I think you saw him pop into practice footage in the B-roll that UW released. He went running with the first team, making catches. So I think he's a guy that if he can establish a nice connection with Jack Cohn, he's going to get reps. And I think he could easily be your number three wide receiver this year, just because he does bring something different than than what the other guys do. And I think really if he can put it all together and be consistent, we've seen it in practice. He makes some really great catches and he looks the part at running routes because he's got speed at his size as well. It's just a matter of making those easy plays look easy and knowing what to do. And now entering redshirt sophomore year, it's time to grind and be out there. I think we don't know a lot about some of these younger wide receivers because it was the Quintez Cephas and A.J. Taylor show last year. So I think A.J. Abbott is a guy who can really benefit from this. Now entering, like I said, it's his third year on campus, and I think that's usually a time where it can click for wide receivers. But if it doesn't, you look at 2021, it's another time because you've got those four seniors leaving. If he can once again set himself up like a Boyd Dietzen, like a Hayden Rucci, that, hey, I'm the next guy, I'm the next wave to make those plays and to get some playing time this year, I think it would go a long way to helping the Badgers be set up nicely for the future at wide receiver.
Yeah, you look at the position and how it shakes out, you're going to need some step-ups from some of these guys. And he's got all the talents, he's got the ability to do it, and hopefully he can show that on the field and make a jump up, because it'll be something that the Badgers could use this year and they'll definitely need here in the future with those seniors and guys moving on possibly after this season. All right, our next guy I think is a really intriguing player and in an intriguing spot. We've talked a little bit about the Jalen Franklin moving positions to tight end, kind of opens up some things at outside linebacker. We talked about a few shows ago that this player in Spencer Lytle kind of benefits the most from that switch, as he's now got the ability and the chance to kind of move into an outside linebacker position and play a significant amount. You know, not just a rotation guy. He could be a guy that's on the field a lot. I know the coaching staff is very high on him. But what do you make of Spencer Lytle as he comes into this season now with a better chance of getting on the field?
I think he's definitely, like you said, the guy is going to watch the most out of this outside linebacker room. I think Green Bay is probably going to be the starter opposite Burks, barring something changing. But I do think Lytle will be in the rotation. I think he'll be the third guy up. I think Herbig's another guy who could really pop in there as well. But Lytle and Herbig are very different players. Lytle brings something different than really anybody else in the room, because he covers so well in space, and he's a guy that they could bring out there to drop into coverage more and to kind of rove around a little bit. He added some good weight this offseason, which is huge for him. But I do really think that Lytle would have played a little bit last year if he was healthy. Talking to Bobby April going into the year, he raved about him and just wanted to see him back on the field, getting him out there. He's up to 235 pounds, so he's got size to kind of hold the edge. It's going to be a matter of him getting those reps and playing. I think you could see him playing a similar role to Tyler Johnson last year, in that Tyler Johnson played a lot of snaps, wasn't necessarily the starter, didn't play starter minutes, but he definitely saw a lot of snaps, was that rotational piece in there for the Badgers. And I think he's a guy that, depending upon the team that they're going up against, the fit and what they're trying to do, he could see a good amount of production at that outside linebacker spot. He's probably not going to be the pass rushing specialist that everybody thought that, like, a guy like Jalen Franklin or Isaiah Green may really bring to the table and that people drool over. But what he can be is a really, really good outside linebacker and really one of the top players on that defense at a position that really does a lot for this defense overall.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, a very interesting player to watch as we get into practices. Of course, it'd be a guy that if we were able to go to practice, unfortunately you can't with COVID, but, like last year, he would have been a guy that, when you and I went to practice, a guy that you really keep your eye on, because he's got the opportunity now with the position and with the skill set to really impress them. And it'd be nice to be able to watch how he progressed throughout fall practice. We won't get to see that, but we'll get to see kind of where he's at that first game, who's going to be out there. Like you said, I think it's going to be Green Bay at that outside linebacker position, given the weight that he's put on, the length that he is as pass rusher. But I think you'll see a lot of Spencer Lytle if he is everything that the coaching staff has talked about and thinks of him, which I have every reason to believe that they're very high on him, and there's a reason why. So he's a guy that definitely keep an eye on at that outside linebacker position, and will be fun to watch as we go forward here. All right, guys, that's the last of our player profiles for today. So like I said at the top of the show, we'll be back with you later this week. We're going to start getting into the depth chart, talk about the offensive side and the defensive side. Probably have an episode for each because there's a lot to get to with the Badgers. So it should be a fun episode here coming up. We'll probably do a mailbag to answer any of your guys' questions as we work closer to the kickoff of the Big Ten football season. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe if you enjoyed, and we'll be back with you later in the week on Wisconsin. ¶¶